If you play sports games in 2014, you need Operation Sports. Whether you're knee-deep in an online league, building your offline player career, living the ultimate team life, or simply enjoying one-off games against your friends, Operation Sports will help you get everything possible out of your favorite sports game. The legendary forums at Operation Sports go deep on every topic imaginable, for not just the latest games on the newest platforms, but also some of your favorite ones from years past. You name it, they've got it. Gameplay tips, roster analysis, sliders, critical analysis, wish lists, and terrific places to meet other like-minded sports gamers to form game-specific leagues and communities. Madden, NBA 2K, UFC, MLB The Show, NHL, NCAA, NBA Live, WWE, Forza, Gran Turismo, and more. Of course, that's not all. Operation Sports keeps you up to date with the latest news from around the sports game world, along with in-depth reviews, previews, press releases, and opinions. Each community member can also create their own arena where you, too, can blog about anything sports or sports game related to your heart's content. Operation Sports also produces great audio content, including the Dual Threat podcast, as well as the Press Row podcast, the definitive sports game show. 2014 is going to be another groundbreaking year for sports games. Be sure to make Operation Sports the center of it all. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports gaming.
Hello, this is the Press Row podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back. It is the Press Row podcast for your Friday, September 26, 2014. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the heart of the sports game release season. It is the best time of year in many ways, and certainly if you are a fan of sports video games, boy, you are just rolling in it. So let's get right to it. Moving from left to right on your radio, our esteemed panel this evening. Up first, we have a man who is making the transition from print to video right in front of our eyes. From Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weedeye. Brian, welcome to the show.
It's interesting the different ways people look at video versus articles and who likes what versus the other. Very different segments of people, actually, as I'm finding out. I'm doing these daily recaps now, basically just summarizing the news of the day. And I've gotten like huge amounts of feedback from people who love it. And then there are also people who tell me that I should not be doing video at all because they just want to read things. So, it's been fun to put together, though. And then I'm just trying to balance the two and give everybody what they want, which is impossible, as I'm finding out.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Up next, we have a man who is calling into this podcast while camped out in front of the MLB.TV offices, desperately trying to get the Texas Rangers out of the Oklahoma City home broadcast area, from Operation Sports, Mr. Chris Sanner. Chris, welcome to the show.
You know, I think desperate is a very strong word, because this year I've actually been trying to protest them just to cancel the Ranger season altogether, just to cancel it, not play it anymore, and let the AAA team play, and we can pick it up again next year. Just, you know, I wanted something to hang my hat on, and if the Rangers could somehow, you know, the AAA team could do well, but their AAA team was playing in the majors this year, and hence the second worst record in baseball. So,
Chris, who is the AAA team? Is that Frisco? Who is it?
It is Round Rock now. It used to be Oklahoma City, which, strange fact, is why Oklahoma City is in the Rangers market. But now it's Round Rock, Oklahoma City. Literally, the Rangers aren't even popular enough here to call this their home market. So I'm just tired of being blacked out of the Rangers.
Well, who are the 89ers playing for now?
That would be the Red Hawks now, when you are a decade and a half behind, man. But yeah,
I was trying to be hipster on you.
I know. They're actually the Astros affiliate. So, and no one around here, no one outside of Houston cares about the Astros. Let's just be honest. And yeah, so it's just not any good.
All right. Well, that voice you heard up next is a man who has begun work on his autobiography, tentatively titled The Lightning versus the Stoners, from Polygon, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
Rich, you always throw, you know, to me with things that require a lot of context. The Lightning and the Stoners were the only two youth league teams in my youth league when I was 9 years old. And I did a little bit of Googling, thank God for Google, and I found that those were the names of two American Soccer League, if anybody knows that league, two teams in the ASL who had won the most recent championships when our league was formed. But it's funny because, again, you have nine-year-old kids running around saying that they play for the Stoners, and they are Stoners. And we didn't have any idea what that meant at the time.
And up next, we have a man so young he will not recognize the world without Derek Jeter playing for the Yankees. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
For the record, I started following baseball in like 93, maybe 90. 94. I remember the Yankees when they had Randy Velarde at second base. Jeter's been their shortstop pretty much for most of my life. So
it's okay. Trust me. I wish I was your age. Trust me. All right.
I did.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I went and saw them play the Blue Jays on Sunday. So that'll be the last time I see him play in person. He hadn't. RBI double and a couple other hits. It was beautiful.
Yeah, what was the stadium like for that? Because I can imagine it was quite an event.
Oh yeah, I mean the place went nuts every time he came up to bat, it was really something special.
All right, well tonight we got a lot going on. Obviously, it is FIFA 15 release week, so we're going to talk about our own initial impressions of that, as well as those of the communities, the Operation Sports community, and over at Pasta Padre as well. We're also going to talk about a piece that Owen Good wrote for his roster file column at Polygon, talking about the challenges that face kind of actually everybody these days that love sports video games, the consumers, the developers, the executives who have to make tough decisions, all those kind of things. But before we get to that, as I mentioned, this is the heart of sports game release season. There's a whole lot that's out there. And I just want to kind of go around the table and get some anecdotes on what we've been playing the most, or some of the most interesting things that have happened, good or bad, in the sports games that we're playing. I'm actually going to start it off. for those of you who follow me in any way, you know that I'm a big fan of the golf club. I love the game. I try to play it as often as I can. I try to get in around. Certainly can't do it every day, but I try to get in around at least every other day or so. And over on the Dodd Scientific site, we've been putting a whole bunch of tournaments together for the community over there, which has been a lot of fun. And last night, I thought I had it. I thought, finally, that I had the game figured out. I typically shoot in the mid-80s on most courses. But last night on one of the courses, the third course of a four-course tournament, I shot a -9. I shot 9 under par, and I was just everything worked right. My approach shots worked right. I made a lot of putts. I even could have probably shot 11 or 12 under had I made a couple of other putts that I missed by inches, but I was victorious. I was triumphant. And then I played the fourth round of the tournament today at a different course, and I shot 18 over par. So clearly, I do not have it figured out. And the variety of courses really are very stark. In fact, the course I shot an 18 over today was particularly challenging, with tons of water and several holes with greens that are surrounded by water. And man, I just love the golf club. I love almost everything about it. And even though I shot 18 over par, I just, as soon as that round was over, I wanted to get back out there and do it again. Chris Sander, you've been playing some of the golf club, I believe. How has your experience been?
I have had, I'm trying to think of the best way to put it without sounding like, I don't know. It's been a really good experience, but there's just, some of the game's flaws have really been starting the show after about round 200 something or something like that. It's just really, the game flaws really do start to just shine big time after several rounds, and you just start seeing, the putting, just some of the, just getting a little bit more guidance, that sort of thing. But I'm still having a blast with this game, despite all that. It just, I think the big thing is that, again, I still am not shooting in such a way where I feel like if I shoot really poorly, it was someone else's fault. You know, I feel, you know, I don't feel like it was anything but my own fault, because I feel like I am in control of every shot. As we were discussing in the pre-show, you know, you got to hit your approach shots if you want to shoot really well. I mean, I will shoot below par half the time, maybe a little over half the time, and it's usually because I'm on with my approach shots. If you're, you know, putting 40, 50 feet every time because your approach is you're just trying to get on the green, you're in trouble. You got to really attack the hole, and that will some courses, that's easier said than done, though, Rich, as you alluded to. There are some out there that I'm pretty sure people who enjoy, like, torture and stuff like that design, because, my goodness, it's just terrible, but I enjoy playing the easier courses in the game. I will shoot, you know, down in the 50s, no problem. Then you get in the hard courses, and it just depends on what kind of shots you have to make and such. But there are some courses I will be right up there with you, Rich, at plus 18, plus 20. So it's a great game in that sense. I mean, I wish there were a few things that additional, like, change to it and such, but I guess that's why you have sequels, right?
Sequels or just additional content updates.
Yeah, you know.
Who knows? The other thing that's really changed the game for me is using the L2 to adjust the type of shot. It's really – I didn't really know that was there for
the first
week or so. And, you know, talk about approach shots. You can really dramatically improve your ability to get close to the pin. If you get that L2 and you add a little more loft, or you remove a little bit of loft, it really, and add some spin, it really does give you a whole lot more options. It can also be catastrophic, too, when you adjust it a little too much and you fly over the green into the water, as I've done a few times.
I am guilty of using that way too much and actually screwing up shots a lot of times. Because, I discovered that early on. It's actually amazing. I did not know that the percentages up at the top changed for, like, your lie and such. So I was always guessing in the sand, like, well, maybe I'm deep, maybe I'm not. I was like, how do you know this? And I was really frustrated at first. And then I figured that out, and it was like a light bulb came on, and my game got instantly better at that point. So Like I said, you really do feel like you're in control. It's just, man, there are some visual things I feel like I would like to have now that I've really played a lot.
So one of the other things that I've been playing, or trying to play, and I've been going on a bit of a rant recently, most recently on our latest Press Row Hangout, is our Madden 15 online CFM, of which Brian and Owen are both members. We actually had to put it on pause because the desyncs got so bad to the point where the majority of the user of the head-to-head games were desyncing multiple times. And so we basically paused it, and I went on a rant about it. And yesterday or today, there was a patch to the game to potentially improve it. Or to reduce the number of desyncs. And I was on, you know, the Madden, one of the folks on the Madden development team reached out to me directly, and we had quite a long conversation, and we're talking about it a little bit. So they are working on it. They made some adjustments. They are aware. They definitely do not like the issues that have cropped up. Owen Good, you've been in the league. You've been part of the desyncs, and now post patch you're able to play a game through to completion. How are you feeling about the Madden Online desync issue? Do you think this is going to help us get our league back rolling again?
Well, I mean, I'm in the league as a single player. I play a running back, and that's it. And that's by design. It's because I'm terrible at defense. But I'm not sure if the desync issue was less apparent for me than for others. I didn't really run into it until this week when I tried to play Gus Ramsey of ESPN. And fortunately, I was desynced about four times in the middle of a throttling. EA Sports repaired the patch, repaired the situation, and allowed Gus to complete his game and destroy me. All kidding aside, I've been running two leagues on Madden. One is sort of it's a laboratory. I'll use the European pronunciation there for for what I'm trying to do in our league with how many guys do we have? 20?
Yes, 20.
Yeah. So, you know, in a league of 20 human players, and that would leave 12 other, you know, bot teams, I've got to be creative with my play calling. And it didn't go so well against Gus last night, I can tell you that. He's got a good team, and he's got good skills, but at least it didn't disconnect. And the thing about the disconnects were I felt bad for him because he was pulling off some really good highlight plays. I don't know if those translated to achievements for him or what, but you never want to have a result nullified when you return a punt for a touchdown. And I'm glad to hear that EA Sports appears to have served some kind of a server side patch on this, that fixes the desync issue. Because you never want, I think what you said, you know, summed it up best, which was with that kind of uncertainty, you go into every game going, well, you know, is this not going to count? Why should I even try?
Yeah.
Or you go down two or three touchdowns early and you go, well, this is going to get wiped out. So right. I can go for it on fourth down and 20. Why not?
Yep. So
it was starting to affect how we were playing the games. And, you know, I didn't see any complaints from anybody in the league that that they had desync issues. So I hope that this corrects it for good. I don't know what the problem was. So I've been, you know, to answer your question fully, I've been playing Madden. I got FIFA yesterday. Yep. Have been playing that. We'll talk about that more. And the other sports video game I've been playing is International Shoot at a Cave in Russia. Simulator 2014.
Just a roster update.
Yeah, it's a roster update with the with the acolytes and the dregs or whoever it is in Destiny. I didn't realize that this exploit, or it's not an exploit really, it's just a farming scenario. It's not so fertile if you jumped in, you played 4 hours, and you have a low level character and you didn't go back. It's not such a great deal. So that's what I've been playing.
You know, Brian, you're also in our Madden League. And, you know, as we've talked about, the reason that it's so frustrating is because when you have 20 people and all these people have jobs and families and careers and multiple responsibilities, and when you go to schedule the game, you have a very short window of time, and then when the games get, you know, disconnected and desynced, it's incredibly deflating. But again, it looks like, well, you know, we are cranking the league back up, and we're hoping for the best. What are your thoughts on you know, on the Madden 15 desync fixes and where that all stands?
Yeah, when you look at usage statistics and these companies do that with all their modes and where people are spending time, when you have issues like this where we, even like the most dedicated people there are to these games, wanting to play them despite issues, trying to find a way around them, sticking with it longer than maybe reasonably you should, when something breaks on us, this the type of people we are, the more dedicated groups of people, that's when they start to say, why am I bothering? They start to turn away from these type of modes. And of course, the casuals would too, because why are you wasting my time and ruining my results and everything? And so then in a year or two, the EA looks at Connected Franchise and says, oh, what, our usage numbers went down. People just don't want to play this anymore. They want to play Ultimate Team. Look at the growth in Ultimate Team. So then they shift more resources there and they just scrap it like NHL did or whatever. I think it's important, though, to note what they actually did with to address the desyncs, because calling it a fix may not be appropriate. What they did is they locked the camera toggle to on. So in your online games against other people, you use the D-pad to switch the camera. You can do that in your games now. It's locked to on even if you have it set to off. Personally, it's just locked to on universally. So in your user games, you've got the camera toggle on and the ability to use the D-pad to shuffle through them. In your offline games, though, again, or in your online franchise, but against the CPU, I guess is the better way to say it, the camera toggle, you can still set that to off, and you'll still be able to use the D-pad as the strategy pad. And this is, I've seen complaints from a lot of people upset about this, that now in their online games, they can't have their camera toggle off because now they can't use their strategy pad. And they have to use the right stick, which is more difficult to shuffle through things with. So there's actually people upset that they've locked the camera toggle on. And I can't really blame them, because this is a setting, of course, we're always big on options. And it's a setting you're supposed to be able to control. And now, because of some issue on EA's side, you're forced to have it on all the time in any online game. So that's the fix. And as far as I can tell, they haven't indicated that there's a different fix coming. This may just be it.
Well, I will give credit where credit's due. They are working on it. They are aware, and they are trying. And that's worth something. Again, with stuff like this, I mean, I hate to get too ranty about it anymore. I mean, internet-based connectivity and online games is very complicated, difficult stuff. So they're aware. They're working on it. They're making updates. And the reason, again, that we talk about it so much is because, you know, we really enjoy the fun and camaraderie of being in a community and in a league. I mean, Owen writes these amazing stories about Perseus Oxendine, and, you know, Gus Ramsey quotes his coach, you know, in his write-ups. I mean, it's a lot of fun, and all that fun is sucked away when you have these rampant desyncs. You can have disconnection anytime, but, you know, over and over again, it was a bit terrible.
And the fantastic rivalries we have, Rich. Oh, I mean, yeah. Who can talk? Who? Everybody should talk more about my games against TJ, because they are just so amusing to me, yeah. and to anyone that isn't TJ, I suspect.
For sure. You mentioned NHL, Brian, and Sumit. You wrote up the review for NHL 15. You know, give us a couple of minutes on that. Obviously, you played it a lot. What's your take on NHL 15?
Yes. Well, the review did go up on Polygon last week. I gave it a 5.5 out of 10. I believe the phrase I used for it was a colossal disappointment and a major misstep for the series' first outing on a new generation of consoles, because, you know, I believe that. And you know, I said as much on the previous episode, certainly, and also in an overview video that I did on Polygon with my colleague Griffin McElroy. You know, there's something I said in the review that is in the middle of the review, you know, when I was sort of transitioning into talking about the lack of modes, and I said, like, you know, the more I explored NHL 15 off the ice, you know, not, you know, outside of actually playing games, the more I did that, you know, the more, like, annoyed, frustrated, incredulous and angry I became, and it really is true. I actually saw Zav D'Amatos, the joystick, posted a review today, I think, or yesterday, and, you know, there's stuff he mentioned in there that I didn't even notice was missing. You know, the degree to which this game has been neutered from last year is astonishing. It's insulting to longtime fans of the franchise. And yes, EA is patching features back in. I think they just started, I want to say yesterday was the first, you know, patch. They added, like, I think maybe the 3-star stuff and a few other things. But the more I play that game, you know, the more amazed I became that you know, they expect people to pay $60 for that at launch. And, you know, I think it was Owen who retweeted a piece from Good Game Bro today. They were like, you know, NHL's fans deserved a delay for that game. I don't know that a delay of, like, what they did for Live, like 3 weeks, I don't think that would have accomplished anything in terms of them being able to deliver a more complete product. And you know, certainly they weren't going to pull an NBA Elite or a Live 13 and scrap this game, because it's not like it was broken, just incomplete. But Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm going to go back to NHL 15 only because I have to for my job. I mean, only because I'm going to have to, you know, keep seeing what they add back in with the patches. But I really don't want to.
You know, the last thing that I want to talk about before we get into FIFA 15, because it is FIFA 15, is MLB 14, the show. I've spoken at length about how much I love MLB, the show, the experience of just playing the game of baseball on the PlayStation 4. It has been by far the most enjoyable baseball experience I've ever had, and it's not even close. It's another example of just almost antagonistic frustration that I have with their online franchise. We have been trying to complete a 30-game online franchise. 4 times we've tried it, and the first 3 times, weird stuff would happen at the end. And just yesterday and today, we're in the last week and a half of our 1 month regular season, and I played one of the most exciting games I've ever played, which is saying something because I played a ton of great games where I have the Dodgers. I was down 3-1 in the eighth inning, and my catcher, AJ Ellis, who has been struggling mightily all year with 2 outs in the bottom of the eighth, hit a 2-run home run to tie the game. And then in the bottom of the 10th, with men on first and third and 1 out and 2 strikes, I pulled a suicide squeeze bunt with AJ Ellis at the plate and successfully pulled it off and won the game. And then after I looked at the box score and exited out, I noticed that the little calendar said in progress. I'm like, all right, maybe just didn't have time to process. And then I came back today and I played the next day's game and lost badly. And that's fine because that happens sometimes. And then I come back out and that game's in progress. And the other 2 games were still listed in progress. Like, just basic stuff like saving the actual game stats doesn't work. And then I thought it was just me, but then Gus Ramsey, who's also in our MLB The Show online franchise, was like, yeah, I played the same game twice and never saved. It's just basic stuff just doesn't work with MLB The Show and this online franchise. It gets me to the point where I'm like, just don't do it. Either do it and do it right, or don't do it. And it's so incredibly frustrating. Again, now, at least thankfully, when I play MLB The Show, we're not dumb enough to try to have a 20-person MLB The Show league, right? We purposely all play in like the AL East, AL West, NL East, NL West. There's only 4 of us, so that we don't have to play each other during the regular season, and we'll potentially only ever play each other in the playoffs, so that weird stuff like this won't happen, and yet it still does. It's so frustrating because MLB The Show as a game is amazing. But this online franchise thing just flat out doesn't work, and it's just agonizing. And obviously, there's no patch coming for it. We're almost in October, right? So just frustrating and difficult to deal with. But nobody cares about that because it's FIFA 15 time. Hey, right before we get into FIFA 15 talk, though, I do want to take a second and talk about the awesome stuff going on at FanDuel.com. How's your fantasy football team doing anyway? Are you stuck with injured players while your buddies are bragging about how well they're doing? I mean, were you counting on RG3 or AJ Green or Jamal Charles or Adrian Peterson to take you to your fantasy football championship? Well, imagine resetting your team every week and playing fantasy football for real money. You don't have to just imagine it. You can do it on FanDuel.com. In fact, Matt Nichols from Ohio turned a $25 deposit into over $25,000 playing fantasy football on FanDuel. I've been playing it every week. I've been getting better. Still haven't quite had that magic touch, but I'm going to keep on doing it because I'm having a good time, and it's perfect for me because I don't really have time to go crazy setting lineups every weekend. I like to watch just football to watch it, so FanDuel is kind of perfect, right? Because you just got a few guys you care about, nothing else. FanDuel.com is the leader in one-week fantasy football leagues for real money with immediate cash payouts. The money's real. Entry fees start at just $1. There's no season-long commitment. There's no upfront fees. You play each week or whenever you want to. It's all up to you. You can skip a week, you know, going away or something like that. No problem. You can set a new lineup every time and win every week if you're good enough. And FanDuel is paying out more than $10 million every single week this NFL season, but you have to play to win, so sign up today. And what's cool is I got a special code for it. If you go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use my code PRESS, that's P-R-E-S-S, and sign up now. There's a new user special. It's ending soon. FanDuel will match your first deposit dollar up to $200. That's up to $200 for free. The offer is only good for the first 50 people that use my code PRESS, so don't forget to use my code PRESS. FanDuel.com, where every week is a new season. That's FANDUEL.com. Sign up today. Because it is FIFA 15 week. FIFA 15 has launched this week. A lot of us have been playing it. A lot of people all over the world have been playing it. And a lot of people listening to this show today want to hear our initial impressions, a roundtable on FIFA 15. So we are going to start with you, Brian Weedy. Give us your initial impressions of FIFA 15.
Yeah, I'll be brief because I love the game, but I have not dug into various modes. As I've talked about before, I'm generally just an online seasons guy with FIFA. So, but to me, and I loved it ever since the demo, really, I thought it was an excellent demo. FIFA is all about these dynamic moments in gameplay and then just making them even more because of the presentation and the atmosphere and the crowd. All of that coming together. You remember those moments, whether you succeeded or failed, because something exciting or remarkable nearly happened or it didn't happen. What sticks with me most in FIFA still, and this has been the case for years now, is I can lose more than I win, and I still have a blast playing FIFA. And Rich, you probably know a lot about losing. So,
ouch. Wow.
No, you just tweeted that, Rich.
It's true. It's true.
Oh, you just tweeted man. That. I felt that here.
I was not trying to be cruel. Rich tweeted it too. So, I mean, I'm below 500 in my online season. That's okay. It's still fun and it's still about those moments. And even in a loss sometimes, I look back on it and I say, man, those opportunities I missed, if I could just capitalize on them, you know? And that's a little different to me than any other sports game, whether it's Madden or NBA 2K or the show, is you don't really have those memorable moments from a game as much in those than I think that you do in FIFA. And so it all boils down to things like the crowd, which atmosphere has always been such a huge thing for me in sports games. And the last game that did it incredibly well might have been NBA Live 10. I mean, they all make progress, but they're still, you don't really get that emotion in some of these games. And FIFA just really nails that. And the presentation, the camera angles, the replays are all phenomenal. And the gameplay is just, again, if you look at the features list, I think it's hard to really contemplate what it means in the, you know, in the situation when you're on the pitch. But you really do feel a difference between last year and this year, and it's just they've reduced so many of the frustrating issues with the game and have just accentuated those really phenomenal moments. So that's what really draws me into FIFA right now, and I don't see that changing. I just keep wanting to go back and play another online seasons game against some random person, which in any other sports game I would not do. I would not play random people in pretty much any other sports game. So I'm loving the game, and I think it's really a fantastic effort from EA.
Yeah, I also love FIFA. I love it for many different, very different reasons than you do, which speaks to on a number of levels, right? How appealing the game is to people who like it different. For example, you know, everyone who's listened to the show, you know, recently knows that I'm a big Everton supporter. They're in the Premier League. If you like the Premier League, FIFA 15 is really for you. They have all of the Premier League stadiums. Just a real focus on the Barclays Premier League this year, with the visuals, the graphics, and the crowds and the stadiums. And as somebody now who watches the Premier League every weekend, Saturdays, Sundays, I'm really into it. So it's even that much more appealing to me. I've only really been following big time international soccer for the last few years, but in some ways, it's more appealing to me this year because of that, you know. And the way that I play the game is I immediately started a season as a manager of Everton. And that's when the difficulties still kind of come in for me, right? Because I know a lot more now than I ever did. Like, I understand that when you start, you're in the transfer window and you're selling players and you're buying players, and different teams will have different opportunities to buy different players of different calibers. you can send scouts around the world. Like, I get that more, but it's still not, you know, it's not like playing a baseball game or a football game where I just understand the inner workings of that more. But I'm just really, really thoroughly enjoying playing my season as Everton. I've only played a few of, well, I played my three preseason friendlies, and then I played my first Premier League match against Leicester City and actually won 2-1 when I kicked a 40-yard-ish free kick in like the 87th minute to win the game. So I just love a lot about it, but yet I still feel very much like a caveman when I'm playing FIFA, because unlike baseball, where I know the tactics, right? I know if a speedy guy is at the bat, I might want a bunt, or I know when to steal a base, or if I have a power pitcher, I throw differently than if I've got a junk baller. Or in Madden, where I know my strengths, you know, my weaknesses on the offensive line, if I have a good passing team, if I have a good running team. You know, in the NHL, I understand when I got my top line out there, I want to focus on scoring. If I got my fourth line out there, I want to, you know, I just don't yet comprehend the right way to play FIFA. So when I'm playing FIFA, like last night I was playing Cat Bailey, I'm just passing the ball and moving it forward and trying to shoot. Like I still don't get the tactics of the game. And I really, really, really want to learn, because I think right now at this point in my life in a much better position to actually understand what I'm trying to do, but I'm not even close to being there yet. Owen Gooda, I think you're having somewhat of the same type of experience with FIFA, if I'm correct.
Yeah, FIFA is probably my weakest of the sports video games, and it's one that every time I play it, I always go, I wish I was better at this, and for all of the reasons that you just described, Rich, because this is a rich experience that it serves, and it feels like you're missing out on something when you don't understand just the natural flow of a game or how you advance the ball. And I understand, you know, what you just said resonates with me completely, because it's like, okay, how am I going to move the ball forward in a sensible way to create a scoring opportunity with the defense bearing down on me without backing everything down to a complete Mickey Mouse setting? That said, I also agree with Brian, which is I go out there, I play a friendly, you know, the first of match in my career. I just got the game and I started a career to test it out. I lost 2-1, and it was like, you know what? I still had a good time. At least I got that one goal, which was a sensible cross and was just basically stuck in an empty net. But I saw the opportunity and put it in there. But I panic when I get down in front of the goal.
Oh yeah, one on one with the goalie. That's when I fail the most.
Exactly, and I lay on that B button, and that's just a recipe for sending that thing over the goal. Now, to people who are more competent at FIFA and who are wondering, okay, well, you know, what is new about this game that amateurs aren't going whoa about? The first touch. Off a pass, something like that, and trying to center the ball once it's kicked to you. That is something that's a lot more dynamic, and I think requires a little bit more sophisticated gameplay, because things aren't magnetized to the player that you pass to anymore. There's a lot more momentum in the ball, at least as I perceive it. And so that places a greater premium on, you know, having proper spacing when you pass the ball. I have not yet seen in my play the kind of emotion that was promised and highlighted in the road shows that EA was doing with FIFA 15. It's not to say that it's not there, but I think that if you're playing in a camera view, I mean, my God, the players in FIFA have to be the smallest represented players, you know, of any in a major sports title, just because of sort of how you play soccer and the need to see a very large field and all the players are on it.
And they are also probably the physically, you know, have the least stature of any, you know, professional athletes. I mean, if you look at the difference, right, between like the few big guys, like, for Everton, Romelu Lukaku, is a huge dude, and he dwarfs most of the other players on the pitch who tend to be 5'7", 5'8", 5'9", you know, not your typical NFL.
Even Messi's only 5'7".
Right. So, you know, I played – we all played the opening match, right? You know, you just go straight in and it's – Liverpool versus Man City, right?
Yep.
And I was like, I'm seeing the same guy do the same goal celebration. And then I realized it's because I scored a hat trick with Sturridge. and so maybe that was a signature thing for him. I don't know. But I think – let's put it this way. If anybody is jumping up and down about the this emotion engine that they're putting into the game, take that with a little bit of a grain of salt, because those are the kinds of things that you're really only going to see after a very large sample size. It's not to say that it isn't there, but I do think that FIFA is one of those games where the tension is so – it does a very good job of selling to you, this is your opportunity, don't you dare screw it up. And such that when you do put it in, I mean, you jump out of your chair. And I do that with very few sports video games. And maybe it's because I expect so little of myself in soccer, not knowing enough about it. But it's there. The excitement is there. And I agree with Brian. You know, this is it's still the class of sports video gaming. And, you know, I think the changes this year, I still need a lot more time to play it before I can render a review opinion of it. But it's still just a refinement of something that they've gotten right for about four or five years now.
Yeah, I mean, it just oozes class and style. I mean, when I'm playing FIFA, it just feels like I'm playing something that's almost on a different level. Not even just as a sports video game, like just as a video game. It is just so clearly well put together as a package. And I know people love to complain about different things, and some of the complaints I'm sure are legitimate. I'm not smart enough to recognize certain kinds of things that the, you know, the hardcore FIFA players may have problems with. But just as an overall package, FIFA 15 in particular is just so well done, well curated, well designed, well thought of, and well executed. It's so impressive. Chris Sander, what are people saying on Operation Sports so far about FIFA 15?
Well, right now the reaction has been very positive. I mean, as you would expect with FIFA, I mean, everybody really loves this game. The most recent poll we have on OS right now showing 62% of people are giving this game a great rating in our typical good, great, or great, good, average, bad review scale that we give users to vote on the front page. And I'm sure Brian, if he's ran a poll, it's probably very similar results. I mean, most people are just in love with this game. Now, if you're a hardcore soccer fan, there are some legit complaints that people do throw out there. And I mean, I have not gotten a chance to play FIFA yet except the demo, but this is just very nitpicky, but you know, teams with their styles, that sort of thing, we're not quite there yet. And that's something that as casual guys, because most of us being Americans and Europeans laugh at us for trying to talk soccer and calling it soccer, but you know, just team styles, that sort of thing, there's a lot of little things when it comes to that and tactics and such that we don't pick up on, but they're there, and they need to be a lot better. And you see that even in our forums, you know, people talking about that. But just the thing that you guys touched on and what we really haven't talked about is just the reason why I think FIFA succeeds so well is I think it's just very accessible. You can literally – I could hand a controller to someone that doesn't regularly play sports video games, give them the basic overview, and you could go play. With a general degree, you could have some success doing that. And I think that's something – there's something to be said about that with FIFA. It really – I don't know if it's just how soccer is or if it's just how well the game has been designed, but it is just a work of art when it comes to just a pick-up-and-play kind of game if you have no idea what you're doing. And the bonus part of it is that you can get realistic final scores and such playing very fast games, and that's that's a big bonus if you're on a crunch and you want to get through a season or something. And I mean, there's a lot that is going in FIFA's favor, and it's a great package. I haven't I haven't gotten to play the full version yet. I did play the demo, and the gameplay and everything was just tighter, better physics, better everything. And I cannot wait to finally play the full version. But my goodness, you guys need to Steve's going to be listening to this podcast, so he's going to hear this. So, Steve, you need to quit working me so hard so I can actually go play video games, the thing that we actually do at OS. So, but seriously, this game, it's being received well. People love it, and I'm sure I'm going to log in a lot of hours with it soon.
The thing also about FIFA, it's so big. Like, there's so much that you can do in FIFA. You can be like me and play as a manager of your favorite club, not just a Premier League club, but really any. There's so many clubs and leagues in here, and you can do that, and that is its own 100-hour-plus experience. You can do the same thing as a player. I know Sumit Sarkar, you in particular, you really enjoy being, you know, a single player playing a career. You have the pro clubs, which are a very social way to play with your friends on the same team in cooperative modes. You've got online seasons, which Brian Weedy is a big fan of. You've got online co-op seasons. And then, of course, you've got the monster of all monsters, which is Ultimate Team. I mean, FIFA 15 could be 4 or 5 separate standalone games. It's so big. It's kind of amazing that it comes together as well as it does, considering all the different ways that you can play. Sumit Sarkar, I know you haven't played the game yet, but I'm assuming you are going to be playing it at some point. How are you planning on attacking FIFA 15?
Gee, you know, usually I race into be a pro. You know, that's sort of my old standby, as you said. I don't know. I mean, this is not a game that I can really play online with randos, because I get destroyed even more so than I do in other games. Of course, I'll probably get destroyed by anybody. I mean, I did the foolish thing when I was reviewing FIFA 14 of playing Cap Bailey twice.
Yeah,
that was a mistake. don't even try, people. She will mess you up. I mean, if you guys are you know, playing for a while, which I assume you will be, and hopefully I'll get to play some of you online, because I'm going to want, you know, friends, and by friends, I mean people who are not way better at the game than I am, to play against. I think with FIFA, I just don't, I mean, obviously when I'm reviewing, I'll check out the manager mode, but I just don't have nearly the grasp on the minutiae of soccer that you would need to really understand that mode. You know, like you were saying, this stuff about starting in the transfer window, it's like, I barely know how that stuff works. And it seems really daunting to try and wrap my mind around that, you know, similarly to the, you know, be a GM stuff in NHL, which is like, you know, or at least not the stripped down version that's in NHL 15, but
right.
The old be a GM, you know, had was a really complex mode. So that's sort of why I stick with be a pro, because it's just, you know, me and my guy on the New York Red Bulls, or, you know, whatever.
So, you know, one of the things that, you know, I talk about a lot. I play sports games on my treadmill every day. And NBA 2K and MLB The Show have been the games that I have played the most on the treadmill recently. I don't want to play FIFA on the treadmill, because it is the only sports game that I want to hear the crowd and hear the commentary and hear the sounds of the match. It is that powerful. Like, I will purposely not play FIFA on the treadmill for specifically that reason. And it's weird. I don't know why that is, but I want to just enjoy the experience so much. I mean, Brian, is that nuts? Or, I mean, is just the FIFA 15 delivery that much better than other sports games?
No, it really, it's an accurate assessment. The crowd is amazing, really, in how they react and how you see them react based on the camera angles, how authentic they are to their chants, where they're sitting in stadiums, things of that nature, and I love the replays this year. They really nail on some of the bigger moments, and you see, I know. Owen talked about the emotion engine or whatever they call it this year, and whether that affects their performance on the pitch is in question. But I love seeing the emotion in the player faces, especially in those replays or how they react. It just really adds to, like, this is how I feel. I'm disgusted that I missed that shot. I want that guy to be disgusted that he missed it for me. So it really is. It wraps you up in those moments, like I was talking about earlier. And that's what you remember, whether you win or you lose. You remember those moments, and that's why I keep going back to FIFA, and why it's more powerful, I think, than some of the other sports games in that way, at least.
Like, one of the things that really stands out to me in FIFA is when you have a great scoring opportunity and you miss the goal, the crowd goes, "Oh." Mm. Mm-hmm. Trust me, I hear that. I hear the crowd do that.
I don't hear that because my own "oh" is even louder.
And the way that it's done is in such perfect time to when it's happening. It's like as the ball just starts to sail over or wide is when you hear that. It's amazing.
The other end of that is the relief you feel when your opponent shoots and it sails wide or over, and you hear that, and you hear the crowd reaction. You're like, "Woo, yeah, I know it."
Oh man, it's so true, so true. So Owen, I got to ask. You said you started a career. What club did you choose? What are you? You've said you really want to sort of get more of the FIFA experience. What is your strategy for doing that? What's the club that you're using, and how are you going to try to make yourself more of a FIFA guy this fall than you have been in years past?
I might be just completely naive, but Hellas Verona, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, they were the subject of Tim Parks's brilliant A Season with Verona. If you've not read that book, it's one of the best pieces of sports journalism in long form ever. They returned to Serie A last year, obviously remained in the league this year, and I felt a sentimental attachment to that, so I decided to go ahead and pick them. And that's just purely because of my enjoyment of reading that book. I have no hope of actually recreating anything that they have done of significance, certainly not 1985 when they, won the league. So I've started with them. And my approach is basically, since I know nothing about that team and I don't really know anything about the league, or the players within it, is to just – it's almost like to try to, in a long-form way – create the best lineup and then create the best formation off of that lineup. So just go with the most, the 10 most talented players in your best goalie. Although with Verona, you got a 37-year-old guy who will, immediately say, "This is my last season." And I think you also start with a 19-year-old who shows some promise. So you've got to sort of feather them in during your early friendlies. But for me, it's just like, okay, who are the best 10 guys that I have? I want them on the field, the entire time. And what formation is going to support that? It's not going so well. I'm 0-3. In a classical sense too. There's no 0-3 or 0-3-0. It's just 0-3. But that's I'm playing on higher difficulty settings with more complex controls because I feel like I owe it to the readership to not speak from a babyfied point of view. But when we get done with this podcast, I'm probably going to go back down and back the difficulty down just so I can. Just so I can have a little bit of fun with it. But I think that's the thing. You talk about this being such a deep game And I know that people pointed out, you know, sort of the disappointment in the Stadia, and you don't have a lot of variety there, especially, you know, in the United States and the domestic leagues.
Right.
Although you do with the EPL. But I mean, it is such a deep game. I mean, you can spend a career, you know, playing in Italy, and then you can go play in the English Premier League, and it's two completely different things. Especially with the international competition thrown in.
Yes.
So it is unlike, you know, the meat and potatoes that I grew up with in sports video gaming in that regard. And I do really admire that a great deal. They've done a very good job with that.
Yeah. One of the other real challenges as Everton, and this is matching exactly what they're dealing with in the real world right now, is not only are they playing in the Premier League, but they're also playing in the Europa League, which is the one level down from the Champions League. So, you know, it's a competition you qualify for by finishing fifth or sixth, which they did last year. And they're also obviously playing in the FA Cup tournament and the Capital One Cup. Like, they're playing a lot more matches this year than they did last year. And they're playing a lot more matches this year in FIFA 15 when you start off with them. And you have to juggle your lineup. And you can't put the same 10 guys out there every game in a row. Otherwise, they will all be completely exhausted. And they do a wonderful job of presenting that to you. And they always have, or at least they have for years. But again, just as I am more and more engrossed in international football and understand more what the FA Cup is and the Capital One Cup, or, you know, the Europa League. Like, these are things that 3-4 years ago I had no idea about. Like, no idea. And when I went to England a couple of years ago and got, you know, immersed in the culture and asked a bunch of questions with my coworkers and went to a Premier League match, it all kind of made sense all of a sudden. So, yeah, FIFA just does a wonderful job with that. So, real quick, before we move on to a couple other things, Chris Sander, when you get FIFA, what is your main mode of play going to be? Obviously, for Owen and I, we're trying to manage our respective clubs. As a manager, what are you going to do?
You know, Rich, I may be, and this is breaking news here, but I may be about to try Ultimate Team, like, in a serious manner for the first time. I have never really got into any of the modes, but it's just so popular in FIFA. I just want to find out what it's all about. Why is this mode even popular? And plus, since I don't have any allegiances to any teams, this seems like the perfect game to give it a shot in. But we'll see. If not, I'll just go back to I'll probably join this online manager mode thing you guys got going with the Premier League, and we'll just roll with that. So I don't know if I can jump in like after it started, but if I can, I may even do that anyways on the side with Ultimate Team as something I do most of the day, or I guess I'm not playing it most of the day. That gives a bad impression of my job most of the time. And I will probably enjoy it. Because apparently a lot of other people do too, but maybe I won't. I'm counter-cultural like that or something, but I'm looking forward to it. I don't know where I'm going to fit it in. I'm going to be playing the heck out of NBA 2K. I'm looking forward to WWE 2K, so it's going to have a tight window for me, and I'll probably really play a lot of it this January, February.
Yeah, you mentioned we are doing a Press Row Premier League, a very small pen and paper based online league, because, you know, we praise FIFA 15 for having all these different modes, but what it yet does not have is a way for you and your friends to play in an online league. And I don't even mean like an online franchise where you would have transfer markets and stuff, just, you know, 8 or 10 of you playing a league and keep track. So we are going to pick Premier League teams, 8 of us, and just play each other twice each and keep track of the wins and the losses and the draws and the goal scores. And no one's going to be any of the super teams. There's no Man City or Chelsea. We're all going to pick the, you know, top 10 sides. Like, I'm obviously going to be Everton. Brian Weedow, you're going to be Swansea. My Cat Bailey is going to be West Ham. There's a few other folks that are going to pick some of those middle tier teams. We're going to have a lot of fun, and we're going to, you know, have the standings and the schedules and stuff on the Press Row Podcast website. So that'll be fun. Brian Weedye, are you just an online seasons guy, or are you going to dabble in other modes, or potentially, you know, get into managing your Seattle Sounders or something like that along the way?
We'll have to see, because this is such a, you know, packed time of the year for sports games that attention tends to get shifted other directions pretty often. We'll see how that goes with NBA 2K coming out, and we're still playing Madden, and so there's a lot going on, and that's part of why I love online seasons, is I can hop on and play a match in 15 to 20 minutes, play a couple, three in an hour, or four in an hour sometimes. So conserving time that way and still getting in that experience is kind of what I like about it, as opposed to maybe digging into the modes and dealing more with the managerial aspects and or like the player managing aspects. So that's kind of where I fall with FIFA, but we'll see. I love the game enough that I might try a few different things in it.
All right. So before we get to Owen Good's piece that deserves an extended discussion about can these guys make a video game in a year anymore, which I'm very much looking forward to, I want to take a couple minutes. Sumit Sarkar, you have gotten a little more hands-on with some NBA 2K15 career stuff. I'd love to hear what's going on, because as people who listen to the show knows, I was a NBA 2K14 career junkie, played two full seasons every single game. That's 164 games plus playoffs. What am I going to look forward to this fall?
Yeah, I had the chance to check out the game and interview senior producer Rob Jones in New York the other day, earlier this week. It's shaping up to be pretty impressive for sure. I will say first that the thrust of our interview was, sort of the studio and how they're dealing with the issues that NBA 2K14 had on the new consoles, which is something you covered in your own chat with Rob, Rich. Certainly Rob reiterated they've put a lot of work into the online infrastructure to make sure that stuff works better, and also they've talked about this with features like My League. They really sort of wanted to scale back the pervasiveness of virtual currency, and so that's the thing in my career. So certainly you were still spending VC to upgrade your players. That's still the way that works. However, they changed the way that you upgrade players, because they wanted to encourage people to build more well-rounded players. Because what Rob was telling me was, in the past, you could just put all your VC into one particular attribute, and although your player would have been relatively low rated overall, and he would have been really one dimensional. You could have still dominated because you had a 99 and 3-point shooting, or a 99 and dunking or something. And so this year, the way it's going to work is that you're going to put points into general areas, but you're not going to be able to choose specifically, which type of that. So you'll be able to put points into shooting, but you won't be able to specify, layups versus 3-pointer or whatever. And so that's so that, you'll get better at shooting in general. So, hopefully you'll be able to build a better sort of all around player. And in addition, they're saying that, you're not going to be able to just buy VC and buy your way to the top. In my career, because you can't just get up to 99 with VC. Instead, the badges, which have been around, obviously, the stuff where it's alpha dog and beta dog and ankle breaker, that kind of thing. Those are the way, those badges are the way you're really gonna get your player into that upper echelon of the league. And the badges have to be earned. You can't just spend a VC on those. So that there's a real different way that they're handling progression this year in my career. There's more I could talk about gameplay wise and things like that. But I'm sure that there's a lot that they've already talked about. But I think that was sort of one of the new things. And obviously, people saw that they released that Mentors trailer for My Career this week. So, that's something where, you know, Rob was telling me, like, they really liked the story mode, or you know, the way that it was focused around a story on PS4 and Xbox One last year. And so they're going to continue to do that, but it's a totally different story. So they're not going to have the same focus on, you know, your agent who's like also your childhood friend. They do still have the, you know, off the court decisions like endorsements and stuff like that. But what Rob told me is that you know, there's all new cutscenes. In fact, they don't have a single cutscene that you saw in NBA 2K14. So the recorder, all new stuff. And as I saw in the trailer, you know, they've gone out to every NBA team and gotten somebody on there who's going to serve as a mentor. So whichever team you pick, there's going to be someone who's going to sort of take you under their wing and really, you know, show you what it's like to be an NBA player. And so it starts out, you know, you're an undrafted rookie and you get a chance at a 10-day contract and then you sort of go from there. So that's the stuff with my career, and hopefully we'll get to get our hands on that on a final version, because it's out in, you know, less than 2 weeks.
Love it. Cannot wait. I am so excited for NBA 2K, for FIFA, for our hopefully fixed Madden leagues. I'm good. My plate is full, and of course the golf club, which will torment me for the next probably 2 years. My plate is full. And it's a good thing my plate is full, because if you take a step back and you look at a lot of things going on in the world of sports games, there are a lot of issues. And Owen Good, you wrote a tremendous piece this past week on Polygon. It's called "Can These Guys Make a Video Game in a Year Anymore?" And it touches on a lot of concerns, a lot of issues around trying to make annual sports games on these next generation consoles and the massive amount of time, effort, investment that it must take. Tell me, Owen, or tell us, what prompted this piece and what are the main points that you made in it? Because there's a lot of them. What's the overall genesis behind this piece, and what were you trying to, you know, convey to people like us who, you know, either make a living or certainly have a significant, are significantly vested in the existence, much less the success, of annual sports video games?
Well, I mean, it's a simple trend piece. I mean, you know, we've talked for a long time about how, you know, we've seen contraction in the latter half of the preceding console generation, and now that seems to have shifted to delays. And you know, just look at what has taken place this year. You know, we had MLB The Show, which doesn't have the kind of things to apologize for that NHL or NBA Live does, but it did come out after its traditional release window, and its newest generation edition came out, you know, a month after the season started. And it starts with that. And, you know, then there's, you know, obviously it's just sort of what is almost expected, which is, you know, NBA Live announcing some problem with its development that's going to delay it. But also WWE, it can't get off the ground in its next generation edition. And there's some speculation as to, you know, what might be behind that. But the bottom line is you've got – I talked with a couple of people who were pretty senior in this industry who didn't want to go on the record, but I just wanted to feel out exactly, you know, whether my inklings on this were, you know, were off base or were barking up the wrong tree. And their answer was no. I mean, they did correct some specific things, but this is still an industry that is based. It has its expectations based, you know, at least one console, two generations, three even, you know, in how sports video games are developed. And it sort of begins with the idea that, well, this is something that begins with, you know, half of your game, if not more, already built every year. And publishers, obviously, are not charities. They're not funded by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. But they do, I think, take for granted the assets, the developmental assets that they already have, and they don't give baby the milk it needs, especially when you consider the licensing costs that are on top of this. We've seen elsewhere in video games development, publishers run away from licensed intellectual properties, with the exception of Electronic Arts, which obviously has, you know, the new deal with Star Wars. But my God, if you can't make money off of a Star Wars license, you're probably not doing it right. But I think the example I used was, look at what we took for granted in the last decade, which was the annual, every, you know, comic book, superhero, robot blockbuster that comes out in the summer would have some kind of a video game adaptation. And that is gone by and large now. And I think that was sort of the canary in the coal mine for sports, which is these things just the expectations, and they are right and correct expectations, because you can only be sold, you know, a $500 piece of hardware that says this is the most advanced video gaming experience you've ever had, and not expect it to be, you know, much more advanced than what you were playing 3 years ago. So the expectations of what is to be delivered on this hardware is, they go up. The costs of delivering that have gone up, while leagues have realized what their licenses here are worth. And as I said, they also have this posture of, you know, we're the NFL. We're the only game in town. We're the NBA. You want to license some other professional basketball league? Go find it. You know, they assume that it is worth the loss or to be a loss leader, because you've already got some product out there that's already selling. And in video games, that's not really always the case. So it is a compression of circumstances that have driven us to the point where not only are publishers cutting out spin-off titles, arcade titles, and those other lines of businesses, they've decided they're just going to take the same video game and just sell other stuff through it to you, because there's less of a development cost there. You can't even get the game out in time on new hardware because of all that has to go into it. And as I mentioned in the story, you know, the rumor is, and it's not been knocked down, is that NHL had development staff peeled off from it to assist with EA Sports UFC, which is just a recipe for disaster. Our colleagues at Good Game Bro, Dougie Vini, excuse me, Brian Parker wrote this editorial, but also, you know, Kevin Harley and Corey Andrus. They said, you know, if any game deserved to be delayed, and we've seen enough of it that we're all sort of accustomed to it, if any game deserved to be delayed, it was NHL. But at the same time, I don't know that NHL would have been able to add in the things that we really missed with any kind of a reasonable delay. I mean, it might have had to have been delayed until February. So it's just that there is a reckoning that has yet to take place in sports video game development, which is, what is it that we – it's either this. It's, how can we build the game that everybody has expected and experienced up to this point in a year, and what does that cost? Or if that costs too much, what can we build for what we're willing to spend? And we've seen a really inconsistent reaction to that question right now.
You know, it's a fascinating sports video game landscape. You've got FIFA 15, for example, which is universally or nearly universally lauded as being a fantastic, fully realized, next generation, high definition experience. You've got NBA Live, which struggled mightily in its rebooted incarnation. You've got Madden, which by most accounts the core game is better now than it's been in a long time, at least on the next-gen consoles. But it also has many detractors with many issues, some of which I agree with and some of which I don't. And, of course, we talked about some of the online struggles with it. You got NHL, which I think a lot of people sort of enjoy the core experience on the ice. But as you mentioned, there's very little else to do. You've really got a lot of the – and then you've got MLB The Show, which, you know, again, like we said, is the actual – just the game itself in many ways is supremely wonderful but has its own issues. Like, you've really got a wide variety in the relatively small number of sports video games. You've got excellence and you've got below mediocre and everything in between. The core question is, can these guys make a video game in a year anymore? Is it a legitimate business model for anything other than, say, a FIFA or a Madden or an NBA 2K, which seem to be the games that have the right balance of resources and sales? Is it a fair expectation, Brian Wiedei, for annual sports releases moving forward in the next generation to be a way for these games to be delivered to us?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think most of these games are – they're not trying to overreach in features, really, or technical advancements. And I don't think there's anything technical that's causing issues in game development. If you – you know, it's funny. The games that had the most development time were developed specifically for the new systems. NHL, UFC, NBA Live. Those are the three worst ones. And I don't know how that worked out, because I thought the potential was there for those to be the best ones. But it kind of goes to show that when you try to rebuild or say you're rebuilding, because I think there's some question over whether everything is actually rebuilt, it creates issues, and it depends on where the resources are going. And now we're at a time where, yeah, you have to look at where resources are going, because they're all going towards revenue-driven focuses, right? They're moving towards the Ultimate Team and the My Teams, and where can I sell microtransactions in every mode if possible, like NBA 2K14. But the key here is you have to dedicate yourself, these companies do, to everything else in the game, because you can't make money on Ultimate Team unless consumers buy the game first. That's part of why I always thought Ultimate Team eventually would spin off into its own free-to-play games, which EA has already kind of done. PC, FIFA World is out there, and now on mobile, that's what the games are. Madden and FIFA are all about Ultimate Team, because they get people in for free, and then they can sell them as much as they can. The more important thing is to get them in the door than it is that $60 price tag. So, you know, that's just what I wonder if that's possibly impacting development too. That, hey, you know, we're having trouble with FIFA with NHL 15. We're not going to be able to get everything in. Well, let's get an Ultimate Team. That's the important thing. And as it goes to show, it's not really the most important thing, because sales are way down. So maybe they're going to make more on revenue, but eventually you're going to lose more and more core consumers. And those people are, you know, without those people, you're not going to have enough to even justify the game anymore. So I do think the model still works. I don't think there's anything that's cropped up that makes it doesn't. They still come from the standpoint of having last year's game to build on instead of having to build a brand new game from scratch. And I don't think expectations have really soared beyond what's reasonable either from consumers. So I think it's still a reasonable venture for these companies. It's just they just seem to be failing more often now than maybe in the past. Or maybe it's just that people are much more in tune with what's going on through development, and they get upset when they think something reasonable has been skipped on, and they get upset when they think they're being lied to or being deceived. And the companies, they just can't hide from that as much as they used to in the past.
If I can jump in here, I mean, I agree broadly with what Brian is saying, but I think it's also, you know, the people who pay as close attention to the development of these games and those who are listening to this podcast, we value you and your attention, but we're in a minority here. You know, this is something that, you know, these are million selling units. You know, I think is NBA somewhere up in 7 or 8 or something like that?
6 to 7, yeah.
Yeah, these are people that's a lot of people who don't give the kind of damn about the intrigue that we do. I think what's going on, though, is when you see a series get into trouble is when it tries to reinvent itself inadvisably, as NBA Live / Elite did 4 years ago. And to somewhat of a degree, as NHL did, you know, this year. I mean, they plainly went in and said, okay, this is the time to rip out some things that are, you know, really, you know, kind of gnarly in our code base and optimize them and streamline them. And they didn't have enough manpower to both do that and, you know, still deliver the things that we expected on the previous console generation. And when you see NBA Live, you know, delaying itself, and I've written that, and I still believe it, you know, because nobody has shouted me down from this, you know, they are in the walk year of a contract with the NBA. They have a guaranteed minimum. I don't know what it is. They are trying to just put anything out there that's going to, you know, recoup whatever it is that they have to pay back to the NBA, realizing that they put out no product in one of those years. And it's just that they're trying to chisel off of that loss. But they also understand that if they put out something that is fundamentally unplayable in a gameplay sense, then their ultimate team model fails. And so, you know, at least NHL said, okay, we're going to fixate on, you know, the core gameplay offering and make sure that is solid, and then make sure that the core one-on-one multiplayer offering is solid, because obviously that's the underpinning of Hockey Ultimate Team. And then we'll get the rest of it right. But these games are, I understand what Brian's saying again, you know, that you need to keep the core audience engaged, and the more you disappoint it, the more you lose them, the more negative publicity, you know, accrues to that, and how that can drag down a franchise's reputation, as we've seen with Madden over the past decade. But I also do think that these publishers have something different to monetize these properties that they didn't a decade ago, and they're going to put at least development into the core gameplay product, and will delay the game if they don't have that kind of support, because they're trying to sell other things off of it.
Sumit Sarkar, I know you have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, so in terms of is this business model sustainable? Well, sure. There are plenty of games across, or plenty of franchises across this industry that are updated on an annual basis. But guess what? You've got to have the money behind it. You've got to put the resources behind the game if you're going to continuously deliver on an annual basis. You know, you look at the big annual franchises across the rest of the industry outside of sports. You think of stuff like Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty,
which both have different companies making those annual releases. It's not the same company cranking those out every year.
Exactly. You know, Activision recently expanded to 3 different Call of Duty teams. They're on a 3-year development cycle now with that franchise. Assassin's Creed, you know, Ubisoft, with pretty much all of their games, they've got, you know, multiple studios around the world that are contributing to these games. You know, some in busy work capacities as just asset generation, but, you know, like Assassin's Creed Unity, I think they were saying that there are 10 different Ubisoft subsidiaries around the world that are working on that game. That's not the kind of thing that anybody is doing, obviously, with any sports franchises, And I don't think that's, you know, something that's reasonable to expect, you know, two different, you know, entirely different teams, you know, making off, you know, Madden games on off years or something, because obviously, you know, you where the variety might be desirable from you know, from year to year in a non-sports franchise, obviously you want that sort of continuity from year to year in a sports series. But even so, you know, you can't skimp on a team's resources, and you know, not to harp on NHL, but that's really the worst example of that we have in recent memory, where you know, it seems like they just did not give that team the resources that it needed, you know, manpower or otherwise, to deliver a full featured product this year. And when you look at what, you know, what that game is, certainly, you know, they, as Owen was saying, attempted a sort of partial reinvention of what that franchise was, you know, bringing in the new commentary and the new presentation, and you know, overhauling a lot of gameplay stuff, you know, with AI and physics and certainly graphics as well, obviously, on the new consoles. You know, that stuff they were, I think, mostly successful at, but, you know, they didn't have the ability to deliver on the rest. And that is contrasted with the sort of three franchises that we mentioned that do have those resources, you know, that you know, whether or not, you know, they're given massive financial resources, I mean, you know, they're able to succeed. So you look at something like FIFA and NBA 2K; those are huge cash cows. I mean, NBA 2K made 2K Sports profitable even when, you know, they had the dead weight of the MLB license around their necks. And, you know, obviously FIFA, that thing sells, you know, like 9 to 10 million copies worldwide every year. So that's, you know, EA's best-selling game, you know, across everything, pretty much. So you look at those games, and obviously those, you know, EA and 2K are going to throw whatever resources those franchises need at them, right? I mean, you know, because they're so important. And then you look at something like MLB, the MLB The Show, where, you know, Sony has at times touted that franchise as a system seller. You know, back when the PS3 wasn't doing so hot and was really lagging behind the 360, it was like, oh man, The Show is a reason that people will buy a PS3 because it's so much better than you know, something like MLB 2K9 was, right? Well, you know, that may or may not have been the case, but even so, Sony San Diego is not like a huge team in terms of manpower, right? And you know, they may not have the sort of you know, marquee status that NBA 2K or FIFA does, but even so, you know, and certainly there was the delay that Owen mentioned this year with MLB 14, but even so, they managed to really crank out a fantastic game year after year, and so clearly, you know, Sony Computer Entertainment as a publisher is doing something right there. So I think the real bottom line is, you know, the bottom line financially, that, you know, if you're going to, you know, really attempt to deliver something on an annual basis, which all these people have been, you know, all these publishers have been doing for a long time, you can't just decide to skimp on it one year, because it's going to have drastic consequences.
You know, another thing that Owen brought up in his piece, basically to the effect of, you know, if you don't already have the money for this license, you're not going to be making these games. And that's the thing. Like, we have seen a dramatic contraction in the amount of licensed sports games. No one is stepping up to build anything anymore. Like, it's just not happening. There is no new entrant. The Xbox One has no baseball game to speak of other than RBI, which is you know, you know, which MLB owns, so it's not really even qualifies as that. It's not a sim sports game. Go ahead, Owen.
Well, I was going to say, if I could jump in here, I mean, you know, we talk about, I mean, yes, obviously, if you had a second or a third unit developing an annual sports franchise the same way you have it, you know, developing Assassin's Creed or Ubisoft or Call of Duty, you know, yeah, that would, I think the continuity problems could be easily resolved. But the thing is, Ubisoft and Activision do that because they own those franchises. They own everything about them. And they make scads of money, and they don't have to pay that to anybody else other than themselves. I mean, and, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, hell, they're selling, you know, film rights and all sorts of other things that are merchandised off of this. What are you going to sell off of Madden that is merchandised that isn't going to go to the NFL itself, right? Absolutely. I mean, you can do a Happy Meal deal with you know, KFC or whatever and have some generic action figures, but that's chicken feed. You have none of the advantages that these other publishers have in owning their own properties. That's why Take-Two has aggressively fled that scene, right, and has only come back to it on terms extremely favorable. And I think, frankly, as tablet gaming becomes more viable and more console-like, we might see some of what we enjoyed in the heyday in the early 2000s, you know, going there. But, you know, that requires hardcore sports gamers to overcome a personal bias about where they do their gaming and maybe to accept, yeah, you know, hooking up a gamepad to my iPad, you know, might be okay if it allows me to play the bigs again or something like that, finally.
Right. Well, but what I would say there is that, you know, if you are paying for this license, you know, certainly something you could do is if you're willing to try it, which obviously, as you noted earlier this year in another really great column, publishers aren't willing to try it anymore. But, you know, do the arcade sports thing, right? You know, just put together like a small team, do something experimental. It doesn't have to be a massive, you know, AAA kind of effort, so to speak. But you know, you've already paid for the license. You know, you sort of might as well try to get more out of it if you can. It's just that, you know, in recent years, publishers have become, you know, really reluctant to do that because
they've tried that. They've tried that, and they've not seen any success with Blitz. They've not seen any success with Front Office Manager. They've not seen any success with the bigs. They've not seen any sales to justify the development of an additional product, which is why they sell additional modes such as My Career, such as Ultimate Team, et cetera, et cetera. And the other thing, too, is, you know, well, what if they just, you know, develop something like Mutant League Football, which isn't licensed but is a sports game and has some kind of truck or some kind of posture that people really admire and want to see return? I can tell you why EA Sports isn't making Mutant League Football. The NFL, they don't want to compete with that. You know, so it is a perfect storm of circumstances that restrict the development of new titles. And, you know, as I said in the column, it really create a bind for the ones that do exist and have survived.
And Chris Sander, you obviously run Operation Sports. You know the rabid community that surrounds each of these games. You know the math, right? The number of games lessens. The licensing cost, just to have the ability to make a game, you got to spend $10, $15, $20, $25, $35 million just for the rights to make a game. And then you got to pay the developers to make the game. And you have to somehow figure out a way to make some money at the end of the day. You know, is the annual licensed sports game by, you know, midway to the end of this generation going to, for the most part, be fundamentally different than what we're used to right now? Or is the model going to continue and we'll just see less the same, or perhaps somehow even more players, no pun intended, in the market?
If you look at where the market's going, I mean, there's obviously Owen touched on it very briefly. The guys, all of them have actually. Mobile and tablet gaming is a place where a lot of developers, a lot of indie upstarts and such are finding a lot of success. And I mean, my goodness, three more generations of the iPhone, and what are you going to have as far as the ability, what could, you know, what it can do and such? I mean, you're talking just a few years down the line, and these things are going to be just as powerful as, I mean, every bit as powerful as the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, if not approaching next gen consoles as far as what they can do on their screens. So, you know, you're going to be able to deliver some really good quality experiences. So I say you may not have license experiences on those screens, but as you get better peripherals, as gaming becomes more mainstream on them, you're going to see a lot of gaming, the focus with, especially with sports games, a lot more accessible kind of experiences on those screens where you can plug up a controller and have a, you know, have your iPhone in the middle of it, something like that. Now, that's not going to fix the problem that we have with the annual sports titles where, I mean, everyone here has debated it well that, you know, it's the problem is that there is, you have to do a lot more to deliver the same game you've been delivering. You got to go into more detail. You have to, you know, you have to deliver better visuals, better crowd noises, you know, all these things. You've got to keep progressing somehow, and that comes at an increased cost. Once you get to a certain point, that, you know, once you get that first 90%, you're doing pretty good. It's that last 10% that increasingly gets more and more cost prohibitive to deliver a better title. I mean, you're seeing EA continue to experiment with the always continually updating kind of titles like FIFA World. You're seeing, you know, just it seems like a lot of titles, especially any title that tries to reinvent itself in any meaningful way, has a horrible time trying to get off the ground. So I think what you're seeing and going into the future, you're going to probably see the current business model last as long as it will, as long as it makes money, as long as everybody's happy. I don't think it's going away. I mean, it's a simple point. I think that some games, though, are going to be better served thinking about this continual kind of development cycle where you pay a subscription or it's free to play with, you know, paid options, something like that. Golf is a one very natural sport for that. I think the lesser played sports, I think even NHL sadly, it doesn't sell the best. And if the only way you're going to get that game off the ground is more resources, that might make it to the point where it's not profitable. But if you develop the base of the game and then you could just keep profiting off of that continually, that might be something these companies start looking at into the future. I mean, you have to worry about all sorts of other problems. Cement just mentioned tennis is something, but it's just you have to approach it as you have to approach it carefully if you're a business, because obviously if you try to develop these games, you have to develop an experience that people are willing to pay money for, and then you have to, you know, you can't just expect people to pay for a premium, because that just doesn't happen. But you have to think that if you're trying to develop a game in 10, 11 months, it's to the point now where these sports games, you're asking a whole lot if you don't have a big team to get something out of it. I mean, NHL proved it this year with the possibility that so many resources were moved away from it for UFC, which was itself in trouble. You have Live being delayed, which, I mean, Live, crap, it may not even be here at this point next year. And you have WWE 2K, which will be here next year. But, I mean, they just – it's getting hard to develop these games. And I do believe that's because there's so much more detail that is needed. And that extra detail – I mean, the more things you add into a game, the more things that can break. And, well, I mean, on a one-year development cycle, you're asking a lot to get a game in, out, and bug-free to the point where you can actually play it. And I think we're seeing the results of that. But yet at the same time, I say all of that, but FIFA launches and it plays well and it looks great. So maybe it's just a matter of developer talent or just lack of resource. I don't know. But I just know that the status quo that we've had this year with delayed games, incomplete games, etc., that's going to have to go by the wayside. And we're going to have to get better games if they're going to keep this commercially viable.
Yeah, it's strange that, you know, licensed sports video games on major consoles play by a different set of rules than any other type of video game, and yet me, along with many other people, still expect significant improvements and advances every year. And I'm not saying it's fair or unfair, you know, but when you have to write a check for $25 million or $15 million or $30 million before you even start on you know, day one of your pre-production design, that's a pretty tough place to go. And it's no surprise to me that A, the number of games are shrinking, and B, certain sports, certain consoles don't even have certain sports, and C, it's not like there's a rush by anybody else to step in and make these things happen. So, well, all right. That, my friends, is our show. As always, thank you, everybody, for listening to the Press Row podcast. You continue to humble us with your the number of you that are listening and the feedback that we're getting and, you know, the traffic that you're driving. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Please, if you haven't already, go to iTunes and rate and review us. Help us out. Those always help. We appreciate all of the feedback that you provide to us. So on behalf of Owen Good from Polygon, Sumit Sarkar from Polygon, Chris Sanner from Operation Sports, and Brian Weedye from Pasta Padre, Kat Bailey and TJ Larriman will be back on our next full panel episode. We missed them this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Weedye at Pasta Padre. Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar. That Sports Gamers TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamers Kat Bailey at @_Catbot. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at ChrisSNR. And Operation Sports Steve Noe at Steve_OS. And of course, me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks. We'll see you again next time.